you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast featuring Phil Perry. We are edging closer to Tom Brady's free agency, and we will today speak with Jeff Darlington from ESPN, who's pretty well mobbed up with the Brady crew. Of course, we'll also have Phil A. Perry in town to talk by phone about free agent wide receivers and tight ends, key places the Patriots will have to look as they prepare for 2020. And finally, we're going to have Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus in to defend himself for putting Stephon Gilmore behind Richard Sherman in his PFF Top 101. All that and more on, Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast. Alrighty. Phil is on the blower right now. We're going to lead off with Phil, and we're going to talk a little bit Brady right here and then get right into those free agents. Phil, looks like we've hit a lull as a swallower of his L's. I like to try and pronounce that instead of lull. I say lull
with the Brady watch. Yourself.
Thank you. Brady watch has hit a lull.
It has a little bit, but don't you find yourself thinking about it all the time
and yes.
Asking people about it all the time? And I want to run something by you because we just did something for our website called Primary Concerns for all four of the major clubs in our area that we cover, given that the New Hampshire primaries are upon us. My primary concern is obvious. How do you keep Tom Brady? If the best bet for the Patriots to win in 2020 is to have Tom Brady here and surrounding him with some weapons, how do you just make sure that he doesn't go? And I reached the conclusion that if he gets to free agency, the chances of him leaving skyrocket. Do we agree on that?
Yes. For a couple of reasons.
So if you want to keep him, you have to prevent him from getting to free agency. Now, that's difficult because the people that we're talking about adding, and we're going to name some names here soon, but the people we talk about adding, whether it's the Hunter Henrys or the Austin Hoopers or the AJ Greens or the, you know, whoever's of the free agency 2020 market, they're free agents. And hard to sign a free agent before Tom Brady gets to free agency.
You can't get your hands on those guys to even talk to their agent until March 16th. Meanwhile, those guys have no assurance that Tom Brady is even going to be here. So how do you sell them on coming to New England to play with Jarrett Stidham? You're exactly right, Phil.
So here's what you do. If your goal is to make sure Tom Brady doesn't leave, or at least put yourself in a pretty good position to do that, you got to trade. Got to make some trades. Got to go call the Cleveland Browns and say, what will it take to bring Odell Beckham aboard? Because you can do a trade at any time. They could do a trade tomorrow if they want.
Well, they can't agree to it, if I'm not mistaken, because the trade deadline for 2019 has passed and we're still in the 2019 league year. But, yeah, you could put the bones together.
You could get it together and have it essentially signed, sealed, delivered, and then have it officially signed, sealed, delivered when the league year begins, correct?
Yes.
I mean, and you could also, so let's just bat that one around quickly. $14 million, no guaranteed money left on Odell Beckham's contract for 2020. The guy's obviously a head case. He's not going to make your locker room much better, but I think Tom Brady would look at that and say, interesting. And then maybe you come to an agreement with, say, the Atlanta Falcons, friendly front office, and you say, guys, I know Austin Hooper is somebody that you like. The franchise tag for tight ends actually isn't even really that much. It's going to be about $11 million bucks for 1 year. you're rebuilding right now. You guys aren't really competing, even though you have Julio Jones and Matt Ryan. Bad team last year. So why don't we send you a first-round pick, and we'll trade that first for Austin Hooper, straight up. So you guys got to tag him so that you have him under your control, and then you send him our way. And then you can tell Brady ahead of the start of free agency, hey, we've worked out two deals. We're locked and loaded. These are going to happen. Odell Beckham and Austin Hooper. What do you think?
100%. That's the only way you can convince him. Really, you're right, Phil. Because otherwise, why would you put yourself, if you're Tom Brady, through the prospect last summer of first appealing to the Patriots, beginning in 2017 for a new contract after the Super Bowl win over Atlanta, not getting it. Then going into the 2018 season with incentives that you were not happy with, not hitting any of those. Going into the 2019 season, hoping for a two-year deal, not getting it. Even calling upon Robert Kraft, jokingly but not really joking, to somehow intercede and make it happen. Tell Mr. Kraft, he said in July at the beginning of training camp. And then when it finally is slid across to you, that offer, it's one that you find isn't an extension but just window dressing for a one-year deal. And you say, you know what, how about this? I'll sign this thing. I'll go to Tennessee. I'll go through the whole process. I'm not going to raise a stink, but you can't franchise me. And they reluctantly agree to that. Why would he put himself through all those things if they're not going to reward him prior? But, Phil, here's my flip side to it. If you're Bill Belichick, you've been here for 20 years, and you've been in the NFL as a head coach for 25 years, and you grew up at the Naval Academy, and there's a chain of command, goddammit. And this chain of command means that no matter what this lieutenant or commander or captain has done, you're the commander-in-chief of this goddamn army. And you're not going to be having some guy march into your tent and slam his pith helmet down on your desk and say, I need some goddamn men, and tell you who's suitable and who isn't. God damn it.
Well, so that's the thing. That's the huge condition, right? I mean, I love the imagery there. But that's the big if, and that's how I started it out. If you want Tom Brady for 2020, if you feel like that's your best option to win and that's your best plan of attack as a roster builder, as a team builder, as somebody who we think is going to be a part of this franchise for years to come and we think wants to set this thing up for long-term success, it's a big if, because if that's what you're doing and if you acknowledge, okay, free agency can't even be the route we choose to try to entice Tom to stick around. It has to be via trade. Well, if that's the route you take, you are absolutely hemorrhaging draft picks in all likelihood. I mean,
hemorrhaging,
I don't know
draft
what it would
picks,
cost.
Right? Hemorrhaging draft picks from a team that basically turned its pockets inside out and got nothing out of the 2017 draft. Zero.
And has very little in the way of big time contributors in the drafts since then,
so
and
they could
is looking
entertain
at a draft
it.
Where they have one pick, Tom, in the first 85 right now.
They could entertain these things if they had had good drafts in the past few years, but they haven't. They could entertain this even if they wanted to try and send the second-round pick for this year someplace, but they had to try and strike while the iron was hot because they did such a poor job in the offseason of stocking wide receiver, they had to go out and get Mohamed Sanu. So they
may look at it and Bill may look at it as Tom slams his pith helmet on the table inside Bill Belichick's tent and say, Tom, that was last year, buddy. We tried. We got you Antonio Brown. We drafted a receiver in the first round. We traded a second for Mohamed Sanu. What do you want me to do? I've given you all the men I have to give.
That's I got no more.
We've got nothing left. We've got no ammunition. We've got no rations to keep us alive for the next however many years. Like, you know, like that could be his answer to that. And his answer might be, it's time to retreat. Our best option is to step back, take a look at this thing, big picture, say what's best for us for the next 5 years, not what's best for us for the next one. Because it's hard to argue that for, you know, the next 5 years, the best option is to keep Tom, trade a first for Beckham, trade a future first for Hooper, and hope it all works out. That's probably – I find it hard to believe that would be Bill Belichick's approach, But you never know. He may look at it and say, God, man, we can't have a team in 2020 that just playing doesn't compete because we have Jarrett Stidham at quarterback. We got to go get Tom.
Good stuff. This week you are working on?
Lots of things. We're continuing to hammer this free agency thing. We're on the defensive side for the most part this week, but our tight ends and our receiver looks are already up on NBCSportsBoston.com, already looking ahead to the draft, which I love. And we're only going to continue to wade deeper into that thing as we get closer to it. But looking, obviously, at the quarterback position. We're just going to be looking at quarterbacks, 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 quarterbacks.
And you will be our boots on the ground in Indianapolis when the combine starts, right? We'll be catching up with you, I'm sure, from the combine to download from your brain on everything there. Brady talk, draft talk, and we might be putting the paddles to the chest of the Next Pats podcast at some point so that we can go draft heavy with you. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the plan. All right. So we're looking forward to getting that started up here soon.
Post-combine. Okay, buddy. Have a good rest of the day, and I'm sure I'll talk to you before it's over.
All right, bro. Bye.
All right, we got Phil out of the way, and now we're on to my guy, Jeff Darlington. He is the meat in our podcast sandwich this week. We got Phil at the front. We got Sam Monson coming up at the back. But Jeff is from ESPN, and I've always, you know, congratulated myself, saying, I know Tom Brady really good. You know, I've been covering the guy for a long time, got a decent relationship with him. But then in 2017, they were doing the Tom versus Time thing, and I said, I should go over there and see what's going on, you know, catch up with the fellas and see what's going on with this. I get there. I sit down out in the audience in my theater seat, and I look up on stage, and who's emceeing the damn thing? It's Jeff Darlington. I said, wait a minute. I thought I was the guy. Well, I find out there's another guy. So, Jeff, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm just cheap. I'm just cheaper than you, Tom.
Yeah, that's right.
I was willing to do it for a Tom versus Time t-shirt.
That's right.
You were holding out for
I was
more.
Holding out for a month to TV12. That's exactly right. 1 month to TV12. Well, this has been fascinating.
Well, good to be talking to you, because you know as well that, you know, I quite enjoy your work and your accuracy when it comes to Tom Brady. And I'm sure we can continue to pat ourselves on the back, and I'm sure listeners will just roll their eyes.
Yeah, these fucking guys are awesome. They'll just tell you, sit back, they'll let you know. I've known Jeff for a long time. And how long have you been at ESPN now?
This is my fourth year I'm in right now.
Okay.
But we go way back. We go back to the beat days, the newspaper days.
When you were covering the Dolphins, I was covering the Patriots. How did you become, from an outside beat, how did you become enmeshed with Brady and kind of entrusted and to a point, if you don't mind me asking?
I mean, I don't even know that I you know, it's always a tricky one to kind of explain. I think
sometimes
Tom Brady
it's just
would
diligence.
And I don't want to like overrepresent my relationship with Tom, because I think that he would laugh at that as well as anybody. Like, I mean, we know each other well enough that he would laugh at the fact that any inference that I was like some, you know, like I'm going to Christmas dinners and stuff. But I think I just, you know, it's funny. I actually, now you mentioned that, I years ago when I first got on sort of the national beat doing like for NFL Network, I remember telling myself, I'm just going to go after young players. I'm not going to even go after like relationships with guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, because it just felt like they were so untouchable. And I think at some point in my career, in the middle of this, I sort of realized like, these are all just kind of dudes, mm-hmm. you know, they're all just humans, which is not to say that that's, you know, yeah, I think just being around a lot and kind of, I don't know, maybe just talking to the right people.
Yeah, talking to the right people. And also, you know, especially with Brady, look, a lot of people come at him. And the interesting thing is you've probably seen, it doesn't matter if you're ESPN, NBC Sports Boston, or at the Lynn Bugle, he's going to look you in the eye, he's going to give you your due, he's going to let you ask your question, he's going to answer it as sincerely as he possibly can.
Yeah.
He is willing to be genuine with you if you are genuine with him. He's not going to stand there and hold, you know, audiences with everybody, but there is a sincerity to him and an earnestness to him that if you ask him questions, he will then provide you answers that we almost are intimidated away from.
an incredible sincerity. I think that's the best way to describe him, which is the funny thing about him. I think an outsider's perspective views him as maybe a closed off elitist. The Tom Brady that I have come to know, and I guess the Brady that the testimonial you get from the people who know him best describes someone completely opposite of that, which is someone who is actually very vulnerable and very, I don't want to say soft, that's not the right word, but just someone who has a real, maybe soft side, I'll say.
Yeah, he's got a sensitivity.
Much more emotional in terms of, sensitivity. Yeah, that's exactly the word. That's why you're the guy.
That's why you look so much better on the TV.
He's got a sensitive side to him. He really does. And I appreciate it. And I actually think that he is one of the more human-like NFL players that I've covered. If that's a bit of a contradiction from what the perception might be.
Did you watch the NFL 100 when he was on with Belichick?
I did.
It struck me during that. We both know that the family, the family structure around Brady has always been very loving. I think anybody who's followed him over the years can tell that. I don't think there was ever a time when he wondered whether or not anyone cared about him or loved him or gave him enough of a pat on the back. And as I watched that NFL 100, it stuck to me and stuck out to me that there was almost a yearning from Brady to Belichick to just be appreciated, to be told, you're my guy, I love you. Nobody else could do what you do. And I honestly think that almost informs what we're watching unfold.
I think it very much so. I was very curious to watch that because of the relationship between Belichick and Brady. And I was just on Get Up today, the ESPN morning show, and Keyshawn Johnson was on there, and he was on the camera, like in Bristol, talking to us in studio. I was like a guest kind of spot. And he was basically like, Tom is coming back to New England. Belichick doesn't give anybody love. Tom doesn't care about that. He'll be back. You just watch. And I'm thinking, man, like, I don't think you understand. Actually, I said that. Like, I understand why people so easily want to say Tom will get over it and he'll just understand that that's how Belichick is. But at some point, and I think that point, that sort of pressure point is right now. Tom is saying, well, maybe I don't want to be over it. Maybe I don't want to just take that and accept that and finish my career that way. Maybe I want to go have some fun with someone who shows me the appreciation I think I deserve. I get that that's a very fine line where people want to poke fun at Brady for that. But look, if you're in a relationship for 20 years, you're allowed to, at the end of that, decide ultimately what you want to do. And I think that that is an important factor for all of us to consider as he kind of weighs his future.
Yeah, and that's why, to me, it isn't about the money.
No, it's not for him. I agree completely.
At all. I can absolutely envision.
It's symbolic. Money can be symbolic, right, Tom?
Money can be symbolic, but it can't be about the money.
Look,
if they offered him $35 million today and said, don't go to free agency, I still think he'd say, well, how's it going to look? And I could absolutely envision.
You know what's
him,
crazy? All right, this is not. I want to be careful because I know that both of us really want to be clear about what we are, maybe speculating on, and what we are, what we know to be true. This is the speculation part. But I honestly wonder if the guy, he's the kind of guy. Like, and I'm a terrible negotiator when it comes to, like, if someone's like nice to me, I'll be like, you know what, I'm going to pay you more. I honest to God, if the Patriots came to Tom and were like, we're going to give you $35 million because we love you, we treasure you, you mean so much to us. By the end of that conversation, Tom would probably be like, you know, I'll take 25. Let's keep going. He's like, he's just, and I'm not saying that to be like, there's some level of sarcasm there, but I just think that I think that money is a representation of respect in this regard. And to your point, if they show him the love in other ways by saying, we're going to do this together, we're going to go in there, we are going to collaborate when it comes to finding you some weapons, we're going to ask how you feel about the guys that we bring in. And maybe even we sit down and we really figure out the game plan together each week. Like, I think those are things that would go a long, long way with Tom.
And, you know, to further amplify that is if you look at
that situation if that's not going to be present. If Bill Belichick says, as I was just talking to Phil Perry and said, you know, there's going to be a point at which he says, wait a minute, do you understand that I'm the sergeant and you're the foot soldier?
Yeah.
And you can't keep telling me that you want to sign off on my requisition papers? There's a point at which he's going to say, look, that's not how it works. It's not how it's ever worked. And it's certainly not going to work when he's 43 years old for one more year. We're not going to run around hat in hand saying, clean up the place. Tom Brady's coming through the front door. I mean, so that to me is fascinating. But if you talk about them saying, you know, we love you, we appreciate you and all that, I do think that he's had the Charlie Brown, Lucy. What's Lucy's last name? Saint something or other?
Great question.
Lucy's got a last name. Charlie Brown and Lucy. It's a Saint, I don't know, Van, Lucy Van something. Anyway, he's had it happen before. He's gotten Charlie Brown before. So as a result, that's why I think even if he gets close, people might say to him, don't do it. Lucy Van Pelt. It's Lucy Van Pelt.
Named after Van Pelt.
Yeah, after Scott and Brad.
I mean, I'm with you, though. I mean, I'm with you there. Like, it's such a funny thing because, like, when we're talking about this, I'm kind of cringing because I feel like it's a little bit of a – I think Tom is tougher than we're making him sound. It's not like he's just looking for, like, this weird coddling, even though I know that that's kind of the way we're making this seem to be. I think that he wants to know in his final few years that he's going into this from a collaborative standpoint. And if he goes to another team, that too is something that is appealing to him.
Yeah,
being with a head coach who kind of has a collaborative viewpoint. And that, by the way, that will deter him from going to other teams if he doesn't feel that vibe.
Yeah.
It's not just the Patriots. I think he has created this foundation, whether it be putting his house up for sale. Like people say that, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, putting his house up for sale means he wants to leave Boston. No, I would actually argue that if you're going to put any football onus on that decision, it was to free him up to make the decision, including staying with the Patriots. And I think that that's what this is all about, being able to step back and say, I want to collaborate with a coach, whether that's Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, John Gruden, whoever it is, I want it to be somebody that will collaborate with me.
I won't be ignored. It's like Fatal Attraction, even though I know it's not that dynamic by any stretch, but I think that's what he's probably reached to a degree. Not that, look, I'm not just a piece of furniture here, man. There are points at which I look at my hand and I'm like, holy shit, I got all these rings. And they do talk to me like I'm the quarterback at Foxborough. Go ahead.
That's right. No, that's exactly right, by the way. Everybody wants to say, well, that's what Belichick does with everybody. Well, Tom isn't everybody. Like, if you're going to make an exception, this is it. We're not saying.
Fun's fun.
I mean,
fun's fun with that whole gig up until you're about 35. Okay. Well, exactly. You can yell at Tom too. Now you're 38, 39, 40, and he's still pissing on your forehead. You're like, okay, you know what? Fun's fun, but I don't need to be de-pantsed in front of a bunch of 22-year-olds.
What, you know, like as much, all right, so here we're talking so much in terms of like what Brady wants. Like the one thing I would wonder is, so if we're putting ourselves in Belichick's shoes, are we sitting there saying, you know what, this guy, like, I'm sick of this crap,
100%.
Dealing with this every year and we need to give him attention. Like it's very easy for me to see Brady's side of it. And I find myself siding with him from the standpoint that I think I appreciate his human nature. But what is Belichick got? What's the pressure point that Brady needs to hit to make Belichick say, okay, like we're all compromising here. Where's that pressure point?
I think that Belichick does have much more of a statesman-like ability when necessary.
Yeah.
But I don't think he ever wants to be forced into anything, which sometimes is what the jousting at the podium leads to. They want me to say this,
I'm
not going to do it. But he'll do what works. He is Sun Tzu, the art of war and the art of negotiation. They're intertwined. And if the best thing for his football team in 2020 is to have Tom Brady at the helm, he's going to find a way to do that. And once he finds that that's going to be hard, I think he's going to try and replace him before free agency or right at the start. But what would he like? probably he'd like a version of Tom Brady that isn't so disconsolate when things don't look the way they're supposed to, because that has to take some humans yeah. with him. And I don't think that he yep. could stand the version of 2019 Tom Brady
right.
the way that he got him last year. I yeah. think those things, but you got it too. This is what I'm thinking too, Jeff, as we talk about this and go on our respective platforms. The Patriots, since 2014, began an active operation to try and prepare themselves for post-Brady life. He already eclipsed mm-hmm. it once. He eclipsed it again. And the Patriots have now said, you know what? We're not going to overextend. We don't know what life looks like with a guy at 41, at 42, at 43. For him to get a two-year yep. contract now, and the Patriots to bend over backwards to bring people in and maybe give them more voidable years, it isn't just going against their philosophy, as they've done for a couple yeah. of years. It's blowing up their philosophy.
It's blowing up their philosophy. That's exactly right. But do you, like, and that's, I guess, the biggest question is we're talking about a historic dynasty. And at some point, like, are you willing to perhaps bend the philosophy to finish the thing off, to finish it off with another Super Bowl or maybe two? Like, that to me, I mean, if you can have eight Super Bowls and you sacrifice maybe a few years on the back end, like, I feel like most people, most head coaches, even certainly the fan base, would be willing to do that. But
I think
to that point, like,
yeah,
what's that?
I was going to say, I don't think this team is a quarterback away right now. I think there are teams in the NFL that are a quarterback away.
You say that, but were they not, like, I mean, at the beginning of the season when they had a few more weapons and like when they had Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown,
they kicked the shit out of it.
Talking about this?
We were, and it was insane because they kicked the shit out of a JV Dolphins team.
Yeah.
43-0, who had lost 59-1 the week before to Baltimore.
Right.
And then after that,
they were still a really, I mean, the defense looked amazing when the offense was ticking.
I know, but they were devouring. Who the hell played instead of Sam Darnold the first time?
I can't remember the first week.
Jason Falk. Huh?
Yeah.
Luke Falk. You say Nick Falk. No, that was the kicker. Anyway, it was bad. Before we get you out of here, I do want to throw this and get two more minutes out of you. This is what you had to say on the Tuesday edition of Get Up about Brady's future. Here's that sound we borrowed from our friends at ESPN.
Do you expect Brady to leave New England?
Yes.
Fair enough. And if he leaves, ooh, what do you think is the likeliest? Likeliest. That's all I'm asking for. Likeliest.
All right. If I'm handicapping this right now, I say the Titans and the Raiders are his most likely two destinations. I say then the Patriots are in this, like, second place spot. And then third place, as sort of outliers, I say Chargers and Dolphins.
All right. They pinned you up against the wall. The segment was called Reckless Speculation. Yeah. We both hate having to engage in that, but that's what yeah. pays the damn bills. So you did it. Why do you feel that way today? Not that you'll feel that way again,
yeah,
but why
yeah.
today?
And I'm glad that you put that caveat, the fact that it was called reckless speculation, and Mike Greenberg very clearly telling me he's trying to put me in that uncomfortable spot. But you know, to be clear, like, I do think that the Titans and the Raiders, if you're asking me right now for putting odds on it, are the favorites. And beyond that, the idea that I don't necessarily see him returning to New England, that's not to say he won't, but I just don't have that much faith in the meeting that needs to occur between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick to get enough done to where Brady feels like he's ready to return. I mean, we're essentially expecting those two guys to get into a room for Belichick to say to Brady, Tom, we love you. We need you back. The only way we're going to win these Super Bowls is with you. We're going to give you some decent money. I'm going to ask you between March 16th and 18th, we're going to find the guys that are going to make this offense tick again. We're going to get you some blockers. And Tom looking at him and say, you know what, coach, that's great. I'm not going to string you along anymore. I'm going to give you two more years and I'm going to retire. You know, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's my plan. And if that happens, yeah, I think it works. I just don't have that much faith in that conversation. And if it does happen, I think it's actually a great thing. Honestly, I think it'd be best if Tom just goes back to New England.
Same.
And finishes this thing off the right way. I think that would be best for everybody. I just don't know, with the mindset of Belichick and the mindset of Brady right now, that it's going to happen.
Yep. I think that there is a resignation too. This is what we're headed for, and there's no way to turn the ship around now. It's been gathering steam in this direction for too long to make a change. You have any idea when or if a meeting is scheduled or will happen, or will it start with Don and Bill? Or I mean, any ideas?
I don't. I was reading your stuff for that, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I was looking for you to tell me. I don't know when that meeting will happen. I mean, for instance, you know, Tom's been kind of traveling around. He's in L.A. now and been bouncing around. I don't know when they get face-to-face. I can tell you this. I know that the plan is to make sure it's not one of these Peyton Manning-type tours, that it's not, you know, helicopters chasing Tom Brady's car around. I think it'll be concise. But I think
you mean the free agent aspect?
Got to start with that meeting between Belichick and Brady.
You don't think the free agent aspect is going to be an OJ chase through the streets?
No.
Okay, yeah, I don't either.
Well, let's put it this way. It is their hope for that not to be the case. Of course, that, you know, if he decides he wants to take all these different visits, which I don't anticipate, then certainly this will become that type of circus again.
Jeff Darlington, your maiden voyage on the Patriots Talk podcast. Couldn't be happier that we had you on.
What a lovely time.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Really enjoyed it, Tom. And you know, I really respect everything that you're doing up there.
Thanks. Yay me. You need me at any point down the line, please let me know, right?
All right. I appreciate it, Tommy.
All right, Jeff. Thanks again.
Cool.
All right, there goes your Jeff Darlington. Up next, as I mentioned, Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. He did his 101 top players in the National Football League. Oh, there goes Jeff. No, shit. I should have said thank you and goodbye. Be that as it may. Coming at you right now, here comes sudden Sam Monson. As I mentioned before, my friends from Pro Football Focus are diligent film watchers and graders. One of the key guys there is Sam Monson, who I have had on Quick Slants previously. He was persistent about forecasting since about 2004, the demise of Tom Brady. It still hasn't come. He still remains a friend. It's closer to 2015 than Sam was forecasting that. But we've had him on before. He works really hard at it, and he worked really hard on his Pro Football Focus Top 101 of 2019. What's up, my friend?
Going good. I might finally be right now, though. This might be the time Tom Brady is declining.
You better keep your fingers friggin' crossed, because if he goes to Tampa and he's throwing a Godwin and Mike Evans, look out. Look out.
It's true. It's still risky.
It is. Let's get right after it, because I looked at your 101, and again, I don't grade every single player, and I don't watch as exhaustively by any stretch as you do. But when I saw Gilmore at number 22 and Richard Sherman at 13, I said, whoa, 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 Sam, what are you thinking? What were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, so it was one of the big debates, the cornerback thing. And, you know, Gilmore's a great corner. I think one of the things to do is to level set right off the bat, right? There's like 2,500 players playing the NFL every single year. If you got ranked in the top 25, you're literally in the top 1%. Mm-hmm. You're right up there with the best players in all of football. So at that point, it's just a case of, you know, how good were you? And I think separating those two guys is tough because, you know, you can look at statistics for cornerbacks and you can look at how much yardage they gave up and how much, you know, what completion percentage and all this kind of stuff. But cornerback, more than most positions, has a huge variance in role differential. You know, what players are actually being asked to do.
Agreed.
Are they playing man coverage? Are they tracking? Are
all
they
right.
playing zone?
So you're going right down the same road that I was going to go on to. Good. Okay.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a definite question mark. And one of the things that's really interesting is that everyone assumes that one is just better than the other, you know, with the job. And it's definitely true to say that tracking a receiver across the field every single play is harder than staying one side of the field than the other.
Right,
but,
or not even one side, one third of the field.
Right, but it's also true to say that I think people misrepresent what the sort of just staying one side of the field and playing that one third actually is, because a lot of the times that guy's actually playing man coverage just as much as the guy who's tracking receivers. He's just not tracking a guy.
Right,
you know, he's being left isolated on the backside, and he's actually playing man coverage. There's no safety help because in theory, he's got a full third of the field. He's literally isolated on one receiver on that side.
Yeah, but you're playing man coverage in a bowling alley as opposed to on a soccer field. I mean, it's easier to do that until that guy leaves your area.
Right, but then the flip side of that is the guy that was tracking across the field almost certainly has safety help over the top, because most people are playing, you know, man-free or two man. There's there's a safety somewhere. They're not playing zero blitz with that guy tracking all over the field most of the time. So it's sort of swings and roundabouts.
So it's
right?
not, guy, in other words, to take your what you're contesting. Look, Sherman might not play everywhere with the number one all the time, but he also doesn't have or isn't afforded the amount of help that Gilmore might be in the Patriots cover two with McCourty or cover one with one post safety.
Correct. And a lot of the time as well, you know, that guy is prone to, so statistically it might not look as good because that guy is giving up a lot of catches underneath because he's got no help because he has to protect over the top. And if you look statistically, one of the things that was so amazing, so it was interesting, both guys kind of ended their season
shitty,
sort of on a down note, right?
Yep.
Because Gilmore got toasted by Devontae Parker in Miami or against the Dolphins, and then Sherman had maybe his two worst games against Devontae Adams in the NFC Championship game and then in the Super Bowl.
Let me just put a bookmark on that. I want to come back to that right there with Gilmore's last game. But go ahead. Now continue. We'll come back to that. Go ahead.
And,
so they started cold, they finished cold.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that the Sherman thing was so interesting is because that deep catch against Devontae Adams was the first time he got beat deep all season long. The first catch of 20-plus yards in the air he gave up all season. He was incredibly good at preventing that deep catch, which is basically his primary responsibility in that defense. And you would expect that means that he would give up a ton of underneath stuff, but he really didn't. Like, his coverage numbers across the board were stupidly good. Like, he gave up 227 yards in the regular season total. Mm-hmm. You know, there are cornerbacks that gave that up in 2 weeks.
So less than 20 yards a game, in essence.
Right.
With that, though, it's easier to avoid a side of the field that Sherman is populating, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Put your best receiver away from him.
Yeah, and that's happened in the past. You know, okay, you can look at games where Aaron Rodgers has completely avoided Richard Sherman's side of the field, moved Jordy Nelson to the left side, and just targeted that all day.
And here's the other question I wanted to ask you. With the Devontae Parker game, I remember you're not wrong. Christ, you can't have 8 catches, 127 yards, and the game-winning drive going down the field pummeling you and not say, boy, that's they're going at your guy. But I do remember looking at that game afterwards, and not to be too permissive, if that's the right word, I said, shit, none of those times did I really see him having bad coverage.
No, you're right. That was one of the, you know, the most interesting things about it is he was pretty much in tight coverage the whole way in that game. He just lost at the catch point. And that's, again, one of the things that makes cornerback play so interesting is, what do you value? Do you value the guy that's going to be tight every single play and make the receiver earn, you know, every single catch? Or do you value the end result, whether the guy's actually preventing those plays or not? And again, that's tough because I don't know that there's a right answer to that question, whether you're better off playing the percentages of a guy who's constantly in tight coverage or rolling with what works over the course of time and just saying this guy doesn't allow catches.
All right. Well, agree to disagree, and I'm not sure we even disagree that much because I think that Sherman is outstanding. I almost would have put them at 17 and 18, but what the hell? It's your list, not mine. If I want to do a list, maybe I can do one. I want to skip on now to my guy, Julian Edelman, who, when you look at his numbers in 2019, I think in terms of a slice of pie of a particular offense for a successful team, would argue for him to be right up there. Tyler Lockett, who I termed a brother from another mother to Edelman, checked in at number 77. I look at those two players as really very similar. And with Edelman in terms of catches and productivity and slice of the offensive pie, I think he's a better wideout than Allen Robinson and A.J. Brown and similar to Tyler Lockett, who you had at 77. So what's your goddamn problem with Julian Edelman now?
I mean, I think one of the things with Edelman is drops. You know, he had some drop passes this year, and he's got the Wes Welker thing, right, of being the rare drop that happens almost every single week.
Yes.
And that's definitely a big thing that counts against him. And I think the other thing is he was a little bit the victim of that entire Patriots offense. He was left as essentially the only playmaker there, and teams were able to clamp down on him a little bit more and sort of limit his effectiveness.
That's where I disagree. You didn't have anybody else to stop but Julian Edelman. he was the only game in town.
And, right. That's
okay.
Yeah. But that, that's kind of the point I'm making.
But they didn't stop him.
Well, they didn't. But a lot of that is just because of, you know, sheer weight of targets. You know, the guy had 147 targets over the year. That's like Julio Jones territory. You compare that to some of these other guys that had a little bit, the ability to go elsewhere with the football existed a little bit more. And it's, again, so some of this stuff is, it's tough, right? It's like, what do you value?
I mean, the guy had 100 catches for 1,117 yards. Mm-hmm. And I'm just reading it off because I had to call it up. I don't remember it off the top of my damn head. But that to me is, on a team that was bereft of other talent, didn't have a tight end. I mean, you could almost, Sam, you saw the numbers by the time you were
there. Oh, yeah.
They didn't have a tight end.
Agreed.
They, Philip Dorsett, I mean, Christ, if you're doing a top 101, and there's how many, 2,500 players in the league?
Yeah, ish.
Philip Dorsett's probably someplace in the lower 1,250. I mean, he's not that hot. And I think, really, if you ever did the top 2,500, the Patriots would be well-populated right now offensively in that 1,500 to 2,500 range. So that's why I'm arguing for Edelman. That's why I stand Julian.
Yeah, no, look, I don't think it's crazy. I think there was a lot of wide receivers made this list, and ultimately we had to draw a line somewhere. But Edelman had like 10 drops. You know, Allen Robinson, I think, had 3. I think Tyler Lockett had 4. So you're talking more than double the drop rate.
Oh, you know,
those guys.
You know, there's too many traffic crash. There's too many accidents waiting for Julian in the middle of the damn field. You know that.
Yeah,
you
know that. There is. He's you know, catch the ball.
He's making. Allen Robinson over there on the sidelines, or AJ Brown. All they have to worry about is running into the down marker. Julian's about to get his head taken off by Navarro Bowman.
Well, Allen Robinson is also dealing with Mitch Trubisky throwing him the ball, so let's cut Allen Robinson some slack.
Oh, so now we're creating not a curve based upon the ineptitude of the stiff behind center.
I will have endless respect for Allen Robinson, who has gone throughout his throughout his football career, from Christian Hackenberg to Blake Bortles to Mitch Trubisky. That dude deserves a medal of some kind.
All right, then. So if Julian was so well rewarded by playing with Brady, where did Brady come in on the top 50?
Brady didn't make the top list.
Oh, he didn't make top 101.
But I think his demise has kind of been exaggerated. I think he finished the season, what? Was it 10th in PFF grade overall?
Yeah.
Like, I think he was worse this year than he has been for a while. And I'm sort of writing an article about it today. But I also think everything around him was worse. And it kind of like Baker Mayfield, everything started to compound on everything else and just make the whole thing spiral downwards. So the fact that he basically didn't have any receivers other than Edelman meant that he had to hold the ball longer than he has in the last 10 years,
which meant
the offensive line looked worse than it has, and everything just gets worse and worse, right?
Well, yeah, and I think the lack of protection made it impossible for him to wait as well, which led to a serious decline in pocket presence and assuredness. As you know, Tom Brady with his feet set and all he's doing is pivoting his hips means he's going to throw a dart. You didn't see him with his feet set a lot this year because of the two things. You know, in 2000 and when they lost Edelman, I think that was 17? Yeah. 2017, they lost Edelman. They became a downfield passing team. And Brady took more punishment that year because it was nothing to get it out too quickly. This year, it was both.
Yeah.
You know? So, go ahead.
And he's always had confidence in somebody, you know, before. And even when he was under pressure in previous years, his numbers are actually pretty good because he knew that, you know, if I just buy enough time, this guy's going to get open, I can hit him. Now it was like, all right, now I'm holding the ball longer than ever before, and still nobody's getting open. So yep. There's just nowhere to go with it. And he was A, taking that much pressure, and B, wasn't playing as well when he was pressured because nobody was getting open for him.
Yeah, it was a shock to his system when he saw somebody running. And that, honestly, I believe was the case. There were times when he was shocked to find guys open. And that led to some of his inaccuracy because he wasn't composed in delivering the ball. You saw him throwing high this year, which you didn't really see very often. But before I get out of here, Taysom Hill, could he be a starting NFL quarterback? Isn't this a little premature to talk of him in this vein?
Yeah, it's massively premature. And honestly, like, Sean Payton has been the biggest hype man in the world for Taysom Hill for seemingly no reason, basically from the get-go. It's kind of amazing. Like, the guy has barely attempted an NFL pass in his life. you know, you can look at his preseason, which is basically the only tape you have of him actually playing quarterback in the NFL. And it's not disastrous, but it doesn't scream immediate, you know, franchise quarterback either. Look, I think what Lamar Jackson did in Baltimore this year has kind of changed that dynamic a little bit in terms of, okay, you can actually craft a custom bespoke offense around a really talented playmaker, and it will look different to every other offense in the league, but can still be really effective. And I think that opens the door for guys like Taysom Hill to, you know, to have a prospect that they wouldn't have necessarily had in the past. Mm-hmm. That being said, and I also think that Sean Payton would be a really good coach in terms of building that kind of offense. But it's complete speculation, right? It's like, okay, he has all of these tools, and in theory, you can plug it all together with this offense, and it makes a lot of sense. But it's complete projection. We've no idea how that would actually function in reality.
Well, I think that your grip on the way it'll play out in reality, and everything about your PFF 101 is enjoyable. And that's why I sought you out today. And I definitely want to get together with you more often. I appreciate your insight, buddy.
Appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Anytime. All right, Sam. Take care. Sam
you too. Bye-bye.
From Pro Football Focus. All right, folks, there goes your Patriots Talk podcast for this week. Loaded it to the gills. I hope you enjoyed it. We had Phil. We had Jeff Darlington. We had Sam Monson. Really filled your brain up with information and knowledge. Appreciate you listening. Talk to you soon.